This is F1 Debrief, What's Not to Like? Coming up this week, we discuss Flavio Briatore, USF1, testing, rankings, tyres, pit stops and shortcuts. Welcome to 2010.
This is the F1 season to end all F1 seasons.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that
is... I am so up for this.
That is bigging it up somewhat.
Oh my goodness me, it's been too long. It feels like such a long time since we did a show. Are you happy? Do you know what you're doing?
Yes, I think so. Quick question though. Do you say 2010 or 2010?
Good question.
Because they didn't say 1910, did they?
Well, now you've blown my mind with that one. I'm happy to go with either, because okay. I'm that kind of easygoing sort of person. I'm going to go with 2010.
We'll stick with 2010, and welcome to it.
But for anyone, for any sticklers for the English language, welcome to 2010 yourself.
Good week, bad week.
It has been a good period since the last show for Jenson Button, as he was listed in the Queen's New Year's Honours list, handed an MBE, whilst team boss Ross Brawn has been given an OBE. We're expecting the ceremony to be about March time. Drivers used to get exciting things like CBEs, but since Lewis Hamilton's MBE seems to have been devalued.
Jenson cannot stop winning and winning and winning, can he? What we haven't seen is we haven't seen Jenson in the McLaren with the little symbol on the side of the car.
Well, we haven't seen him in the McLaren at all yet.
We're missing that important bit, and I'd be amazed if McLaren decided to miss out on that. A lovely bit of PR, so expect that sometime soon.
It's been a bad period since the last show for safety, as Abu Dhabi bosses say they are determined to keep the pit lane tunnel for this year. They're making some tweaks to the circuit from things they noticed during the race, but apparently the pit lane tunnel is not a problem, and they're also happy with the twilight start time as well.
I am far more concerned with the twilight start than I am about the pit lane tunnel.
Most really?
The tunnel is in the driver's hands. It's up to them to take it at a safe speed and not to lose it. And the problem with the sun is it's out of their control, and driving into a blinding setting sun is not a good thing. And eventually, someone's going to get hurt. It's only a matter of time. And when it happens, obviously, there will be a huge fallout because of it. And let's hope that the people who pick these times...
Bernie.
mentioning their names. Let's hope that they are held to account should anything go wrong.
It has been a good period since the last show for Toyota, as the boss of Stefan GP, Zoran Stefanovic, and I only wanted to say that because you can't.
Stefanovic.
He headed over to the factory and had a good look round. Apparently, he's interested in the design of the car that Toyota would have been using this year if they'd stuck around. He is very keen on getting to F1, isn't he?
He's hanging around. He's waiting for someone to fail. He's like a vulture, you know. He's just ready to pounce. He's
circling.
He's hovering. So yeah, that's what he is. He's looking for the weak, looking to pick off the weak teams. Who's it going to be first? Who's the guy? Who is Stefan going to go after?
Well, I think we're going to talk more about this later, but it looks like it's going to be Campos. It's been a bad period since the last show for terrible headline-grabbing news items. For example, Cosworth hit the news with "All our engines are ready to send out."
It's exciting times at Cosworth.
And then Bahrain said, "We've invited all the living world champions to come to the season opener to celebrate 60 years of F1.
But they're not going to turn up.
Well, they've invited them.
Okay.
Why is that newsworthy?
I
could invite Frank to come here. That's not exactly newsworthy, is it?
I can imagine there's little in the way of RSVPs. Is Kimi coming?
I can't imagine he'd be keen.
Not for one second.
News and views.
Well, where do we start? I mean, the off-season lasted for about a week.
It was enjoyable, though. What a week it was.
And that's it. We're right back into it again now.
Non-stop action. It's 2010. We're on fire. We're ready to go. And the F1 news has just kept coming.
I guess the biggest piece of news was about Flavio.
Oh, his court case.
The French courts overruled his ban.
He did well. He got what he wanted.
Well,
although he didn't get the money that he wanted.
He got a little bit of compensation. And the outcome was really that the FIA don't have the power to make such a ban. So they didn't say that he was innocent or anything, just that they shouldn't have been punishing him.
It spells trouble for the FIA, because I believe it's the first time they've ever been overruled like this. They are appealing, but it's worrying that the French court suggested that there was it was an irregular use of power from the FIA.
They said it was a misuse of the power of French and international legal standards.
They put it more succinctly than I do,
yeah.
Don't they? That's the key phrase, irregular use of power within the FIA, which we've suspected for a long time, but we've never heard a court come out and say that.
If their appeal is not upheld, it's going to be terrible, not only for the FIA, but also for other sports, because there's a lot of talk that banned athletes will start turning on the sports that chuck them out. They'll use this case as a precedent.
The repercussions could be massive, and that's why the FIA are appealing, And honestly, I wouldn't like to guess what's going to happen. I wouldn't like to guess what the outcome of that might be.
As you can imagine, Flavio was quite happy and relieved with the outcome. And he said, first, Mosley tried to make me lose titles, first with Shumi, then with Alonso, and then to destroy me with this story. I've known Jean for years. I can bet on his honesty. This is an issue between me and Mr. Mosley.
I'm regretting now, for the first time ever, that Max Mosley is no longer in power in the FIA. Suddenly, he's looking like the weak link, and it's unfortunate that he's not around.
I'm not sure that he knows that, though, because he said, in any case, the FIA can easily change its rules so that it takes account of what the court said. They said we weren't allowed to ban non-license holders. Well, obviously, you can bring in a rule which does allow you to if you wish. Now, aside from the fact that that is scary, that they're just going to rewrite the rules to get away with what they shouldn't be allowed to, he said we aren't allowed. Why does he think he's still in it?
Has anybody told him he's resigned?
I don't know. Anyway, the FIA, the actual FIA, the ones who are in power.
the ones who's been elected.
Yeah. They said that work on new disciplinary procedures is well underway, and it was all part of Jean Todt's election campaign in the first place, so it was always part of the plan.
I don't believe that to be the case. I mean, I can understand that they realised there was an issue, but had the FIA preempted this happening, they didn't have to go after Flav when they did. They could have brought in new rules and regulations, as they're now suggesting that they're going to, and then they could have gone after him, and then they could have, then they would have been in the right place to impose the sanctions that they have done. I really do think they've been caught on the back foot with this.
I don't know what that means.
Well, they waited a year before bringing Flavio to account. It didn't happen. Obviously, the Singapore scandal happened. Like, no, well, they did. They suspected it. They just didn't have any proof. They waited until Nelson Piquet was ready to come forward and provide proof. And Max has always said that he suspected something was going on. They just couldn't really do anything about it until somebody stood up to be counted. Now, had he thought this through, he could have brought in new rules and regulations to make sure that Briatore and Simmons were license holders, and the FIA would be in a position to penalise them. But they didn't do that. They just went straight after the team and after Flavio, and it looks like they've made a mistake.
Massa did reveal that he was suspicious. He said...
We all were.
Yeah, he said he spoke to Piquet about it. And Massa's quote is, he was laughing. He didn't want to say the truth. I said, okay, you're laughing, but I understood. Maybe one day we'll speak again. And after 1 month or less, the story came back in the press. I even spoke to Flavio about that in Bahrain last year. I asked Flavio about Singapore and he said, no, no, it's impossible. And he was even trying to laugh sometimes.
I do think...
I can't believe they would laugh about it though.
It's better than lying.
PK said he was so stressed out about it and then suddenly he's finding it funny.
I imagine they didn't. If you have nothing, you know, they knew they couldn't say anything else, and they didn't. I guess they didn't want to lie to Massa. I do think Massa does need to let this go, though. I know that he's blaming this situation and what happened at Singapore on him losing the championship, but a lot of things came together to make sure that he couldn't win the championship when he had the chance. And I do wonder that putting the blame on PK isn't the right thing for him to be doing. He should let it go.
So although Flavio is happy with the result, he is also now on the warpath because he wants to launch a case against the PKs. He said he's not coming back to F1 in a hurry, but he does want to resume managing drivers. And he also said, except for Kovalainen and Degrassi, my relationship with the other drivers has never changed. In fact, now we'll analyse the situation with the lawyers to see whether we should take legal action against anyone who has broken the contracts with us. He'd better not launch a lawsuit against Degrassi.
Or Kovalainen.
Yeah, but particularly against Delicious.
I see. Well, I didn't realise that those two drivers had bailed, and they would have been wise to hang on to see whether or not the guy appealed.
Well, would they, though? Because we quite badly judged Alonso and Webber for their staunch support of Flavio at the time.
True, but it looks like it's paid off for those guys. You don't really want Flav threatening to sue you, especially when you're just about to start your Formula One career.
Do you think he'll come back?
Flavio?
Yeah.
I don't know. The one thing that I like about this, the hearing, the thing that it does make me happy is that Pat Simmons also had his ban overturned. So he may come back to the paddock. And I've always liked Pat, and I think he might be useful to, especially to an up-and-coming smaller team, and I'd like to see him come back. As for Flavio, I'm not too sure he's going to be that welcome in the paddock, but he's got the money and the power and the wherewithal to buy his way back in. And all he needs to do, much like Stefan, all he needs to do is
Stefanovic.
Stefan. to me, to his friends. He just needs to hang around and wait for somebody to trip up, and he can take over a failing team and buy his way back into the paddock.
Aren't Stefan GP already employing Mike Coughlin?
They're on dodgy ground as it is, actually. So I could see Mike Coughlin. What a team! What a pairing that would be. Actually, Mike Coughlin, Flavio Briatore, throw Pat Simmons into that mix. Where's Nigel Stepney when you need him? That could be a riot.
An announcement came from Renault on the very same day, which I love because it was clearly a big neon sign saying, if Flav gets off, he's not coming back.
One assumes that Renault got word that Flav's appeal might be successful. They obviously suspected that he might come good, and they wanted to make sure that there was no question of him coming back to the Renault team, and there were no question marks, and they didn't want to field any questions on the matter whatsoever. So the morning of the case, my best mate Eric was announced. My new best friend.
They announced their new team principal, Eric Boullier, or Boullier, I don't know how you say that. You are his biggest fan.
I love him. He's great. I like young team principals.
And he's nice and young. I think he's the same age as Christian Horner, isn't he?
He's an engineer.
Good.
Yes, he's I don't know how good a people person he is, but he's an engineer. He knows what's what in the world of Formula One.
He has a Twitter account.
Which is a good sign.
I think he's only used it once.
And he uses a Mac.
Yeah, there's a picture of him and Kubica using a Mac.
That's what you want to see. That's what you want in your team principal. You want him to be young. You want him to be using social networking on a Mac. That's what you need.
What about all the engineering prowess, the management skills?
Not too sure.
Not bothered about that.
He seems like an okay guy. I do have one. There is one question mark hanging over him, and that's Eric comes from Genie Capital. He's part of that group, the group that have put money into Renault, and they have a driver development program in progress. They have a couple of up and coming drivers, and I'm slightly worried. We criticised Flav last year for being Piquet's manager and also being his team boss, and we suggested there was a conflict of interest, and that shouldn't really be allowed to happen. And the same thing is already happening with Eric.
He does manage a couple of people, I think, Hope in Tongue and someone else.
Yes, there's some up and coming drivers there, and they may one day, is it D'Ambrosio or something?
Yeah.
They may one day find their way into Formula One. There is word that the program might be scrapped. ASAP.
So maybe they are trying to do the right thing.
You would hope that we know for a fact.
Not
it's
good
the
for
wrong,
drivers.
We know it's the wrong thing to do. It's been proven, Flavio has proven that it's a terrible situation to be in, to be managing drivers and to be employing them in your team and in other teams.
Because then you end up suing them later.
Exactly. So that's the one black mark over Eric. But apart from that, I like what I see, and I'm looking forward to what Renault can produce in the next couple of years, and not this year. Specifically, because it doesn't look like they're interested in being competitive in 2010. They're definitely taking the long view on performance and bringing the team back to the top.
I mentioned that Eric had his picture taken with Kubica, and it's all good because Kubica has decided to stick with them after all. His manager said, honestly, we never had any doubts. We were fine about it. It's all good.
Yeah. Except apart from those doubts he had in public to the press when Genie Capital put some money into Renault.
Nothing to see here.
Not good, that guy. Not a great manager and not handled the situation at all well.
I think they just found out that they like Eric as much as you do.
What's not to like?
On the last news-style show that we did, we were talking about the fact that Schumacher may be coming back. We didn't know for sure. And I think that was like 2 days before it was confirmed that he was coming back.
That sounds like us.
So there's nothing that exciting there. But then he got to test a GP2 car.
But only him.
Yeah.
No other confirmed driver for this year's season has managed to get any kind of competitive running in any form of single-seater series. And except for Schumacher. Are we surprised about that? Are we surprised to see he's the only one who's found a loophole?
Well, they say it's a development demo.
Of course it
and
is.
GP2...
I always had Schumacher down as a great development driver.
GP2...
For feeder series. He always puts the effort in to the feeder series. He really likes to look after the kids and to make sure their cars are good.
Shush. GP2 organisers are saying they are getting lots of information from him.
All their Christmases came at once. GP2 PR must have gone through the roof because
when they
of this.
Say,
I've never known so many GP2 stories.
When they say information, they mean headlines, clearly. And I think it got him all hyped up as well. Although the weather was bad at the start of his test, but at the end of it, he did pretty well.
Don't tell me it cleared up.
He was 0.4 slower than the record set by Kobayashi in 2008. So I would like it noted that this will be the only time Schumacher is slower than Kobayashi.
I don't know. I could see Kobayashi getting the better of Schumacher. He's a feisty little guy. I'd like to see him go head-to-head.
It could happen. I don't think it will, though.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's very, it's not surprising that Michael Schumacher is the only guy who's gained an advantage before everybody else gets to sit in their cars. But like I said,
can it be that much of an advantage to sit in a GP2 car, though?
I think it will be, especially, yeah, he's been out of racing for so long. He needs to be sure that his neck's good. He needs to make sure that he's got the confidence to go ahead with the tests. And GP2, they're not that, you know, GP2 cars aren't that much slower than Formula 1 cars. It would be very useful to him. And fantastically useful to GP2 PR.
The other Mercedes news was that they teamed up with Petronas as a title sponsor. And there was a picture of a potential grey and green livery released. But the interesting thing is it was released by them.
Yeah,
never happened.
They painted, they took the Braun livery and Jensen's helmet and they painted it silver when they announced the takeover of the team. And then when they announced the deal with Petronas, they painted the front and rear wings green and it looks awful, and that isn't going to be the livery, and there's no way in the world they're going to race with a car that looks anything like that. It's terrible.
It didn't look good, but I just thought it was interesting because, I mean, lots of people do pretend liveries and mock-ups and it's good fun, but I've not known a team do it before. And I thought that was interesting. Maybe they just needed to do it to get Petronas some headlines again.
I think it was a good move. It got the pictures out there. And as we saw with the Cosworth press release, which we mentioned earlier, they got a whole lot of nonsensical headlines just because they released their engines, because they got a nice picture in with a press release. So that always helps.
Guess what?
What?
Bernie Ecclestone has doubts about the new teams.
Don't we
again?
All.
I don't think he's ever come out and supported them at all.
I can understand that. He likes strong manufacturers with
brand
lots of
names.
Money. Yeah, big brand names and people who aren't going to mess around with the series. What Bernie Eccleston doesn't want is more super gurus coming and going and not paying the bills and then being locked out of the paddock and bringing silly headlines, all the wrong kind of headlines, to Formula One.
He does sort of have a point, because so far it seems Campos, they may be in the shakiest position because they are casting about for investors. They
yes.
don't have enough money.
No, although they are moving forward with their plans, it just looks like there's a hole in their budget.
Virgin have replaced their team principal, Alex Tai.
Unexpectedly.
Has been replaced with John Booth.
Very interesting goings on there, because that was a short-lived tenure at the top of that team, wasn't it?
It reads as though Alex Tai left of his own accord, but why would you leave about 3 seconds before launching the car?
Yes, Tai was a Virgin man, and Booth... This is going to be a difficult season, isn't it? Oh, Lord.
Tai was a Virgin man, and Booth isn't.
Yes, Booth is no
Talk
Virgin.
Talk about starting rumours. I liked it when they were called Manor.
Okay. Well, they may as well be now, because I'm not entirely sure what hold Virgin have over this. Aside from having the team name, the name above the door, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of influence that old Richard Branson has on this team right now.
I guess money still.
I really don't know if he is.
He might not have people in there, but he must have invested in them.
Well, the thing is, there's rumours that Virgin are reselling the advertising space, so they're taking the team name and then they're reselling the car sponsorship, just as Ferrari have a deal with Marlborough. The same thing is going to apply to Virgin. So I'm not entirely sure Virgin are providing too much money either. Quite what they're doing. I guess it's just the name or the branding. I don't know. Very, very strange goings on with that team.
And then there's USF1 as well.
Oh, controversial.
Now, Peter Windsor said there should be no doubts about their presence on the grid because they'd been keeping quiet over the winter on purpose.
Oh, it was intentional.
Yeah, he said...
That's what it was.
He said he was letting everyone else do the politics thing. And then in the very next breath, he opened a can of political worms.
Right, so not so much of the silent treatment then.
Yeah, he started moaning about the summer shutdown, not happy that it coincides with European factories. And he has a point. It's a very good argument, but really, is that what you need to be saying before you've even got a car on the grid? Before you've taken part in any session whatsoever, he's picking fights about something that is about 8 months away.
The car is yet to know. You're right. I back Peter's stance. It does seem slightly odd that in a global worldwide championship, all the teams have to shut down at a time that coincides with European factory regulations. So fair enough, the guy has a valid point. And now... To a degree, now is the time to bring that up, because it's no good bringing it up 2 weeks before the shutdown. He has to bring it up at a time when it may be able to influence that timing. However, the guy hasn't got a car on track. He hasn't turned a wheel. There is very little to show for USF1's efforts, And yet he's already quoting chapter and verse about what's wrong with the regulations and why everybody has to change to suit him.
Yeah, and it was weird because he was saying, oh, it's very mean that they're not helping us over in the US. And then like 2 days later, he was saying, oh, it's so nice how all the teams are, you know, being accommodating to us because they get to test in the States. They don't have to come over to Spain to start with. And then they get some extra testing, straight line testing days as well.
Yes. Well, this is quite confusing. I got very confused with this bit of news. So firstly, USF1 are going or are planning to test their car at Barber Motorsports Track.
Yeah. The first thing is the FIA said, okay, you can do your first test instead of coming over to Valencia. You can do it in the States. Now, it's rumored that they will turn up in Alabama, but we don't know that for sure.
And we don't know if that's an FIA homologated circuit for F1 running.
It doesn't look like it.
But they're not planning to go around corners. They're just going to go up and down and then turn around. They're going to run up and down the straight and then turn around and come back again, right? So it, I guess it doesn't
need homologation. I thought that was a proper test.
If you're running a brand new car, which has a high chance of component failure, and you're running it at a circuit that is not deemed safe for Formula 1 regulations, you better hope that you have a lot of luck because you don't want a car going off and a driver getting injured. That is assuming you have a driver confirmed to drive your car during the test, which as yet we still don't have.
No, they don't have any drivers. We don't know what's going on with them, really. So then the next move is that the teams agreed they could have 2 extra straight line tests. And this is where you got all confused, isn't it?
Well, the agreement is teams are allowed 6 days of straight line testing, which is down from the 9 days they were all allowed last year. So yeah, it's further restricted.
The regulations say 6, and apparently the teams agreed to cut it to 4.
But they didn't get an agreement from USF1. So at the moment, they are letting USF1 stick to the original 6, or everybody's going to stick to the original 6?
It seems as though USF1 have the extra 2 days and everyone else is going to have 4, but it's still not in the regulations yet, so it may be that everyone ends up doing 6 anyway. That's where it's not clear. But Peter Windsor was saying thank you to the teams for accommodating us, giving us this extra days, because presumably that is what they signed up to, 6 days.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to thank the teams for that. He did sign up to this, and in the same way that he shouldn't be criticising a 2-week summer shutdown when that was in the regulations, you know, when he agreed to come into Formula 1, in the same way, he shouldn't need to be thankful when he's allowed to do the running that he was expected to be doing.
Maybe the testing generosity is to placate him over the summer shutdown.
Possibly.
Thing.
I don't understand why they keep cutting testing farther and farther back and reducing it more and more. I'm stunned that they don't all want their 6 days.
Half the teams aren't turning up to full testing, let alone straight line testing.
Well, that's true. I love the fact that there's 2 different types of testing. And not only do you need to keep a track of what people are allowed to, when people are allowed to test, but what sort of testing they're doing. It's not confusing to any Formula One fans whatsoever, is it?
But also they can trade in their straight line testing for wind tunnel hours.
Oh, help me God.
So you might find that a team doesn't do all their straight line testing days, but instead they're locked away in a factory somewhere.
Good luck keeping track of this. Good luck proving it too.
The other thing that USF1 did was put up some videos, which is good. That's what we've been asking for.
High definition videos. HD comes to Formula One.
Peter Windsor said that he would make the team open to the fans, and there have been lots of interviews with people that work there.
Well, yes. I mean, interestingly, just going back to the subject of the test, Peter Windsor said that USF1 will be more open to fans than any other Formula One team in history, and their first test, if it happens at Barber Motorsports Track, is rumoured to be a closed test for no fans. So that's nice. The only time that the car will run on US soil, and they've shut it to all the US fans. Handy that. Anyway, back to the videos. Love them. I really do like the fact that we've got up close and personal with all of the engineers in the factory. And my goodness, we have spoken to all of them, haven't we?
I think, in
immense detail.
Yeah, I think he asked them all how they got into the team, where they studied, and how they're going to feel when the car hits the track.
Yes. And we did that for everybody.
Generally, the answer is emotional. Which is fair enough.
But it's good, you know. It's more videos. It's more than anybody else is doing. So you can criticise them.
It's fair to say we did criticise the videos because they're not the best. But there was a great comment from Kevin G on sidepodcast.com. He said, as for the general negative response to the video, it's like there's a simultaneous argument of don't bother showing me stuff if you can't show me a car with a bow on it, and show me more stuff because you promised. That confuses me.
That's a fair comment. That sums me up. Actually, that sums up my attitude. What I want is open access but open access that's interesting and well-produced and entertaining.
Yes.
And I want it all.
We don't want much,
and
do
I want
we?
It from a new team that have got far more important things to be thinking about than what I want.
I am dreading this section because when we were prepping the show, we couldn't get through this bit without you swearing a lot. But we'll just go ahead with it.
I do apologise in advance. It's a subject that has me a little bit riled, unexpectedly, because it's not a major announcement of any significance.
Well, that's where you're wrong.
Right.
Because as usual, there was the announcement of an announcement, and Autosport were supposed to be getting David Coulthard up on stage at Autosport International to reveal something major for the site.
For autosport.com.
Yes. We thought it would be something good, like live streaming.
Excellent.
The race car show.
Yes.
That would be good. Or perhaps the online version of the magazine coming back permanently.
Which we all want.
They had to do that.
Do you know we have not bought now an issue of the weekly Autosport magazine for over a year?
No.
Because the last one was the Christmas edition, 2008. So a whole year has passed and we've not spent a single penny on that magazine.
I think it's fair to say we would sign up to an online magazine.
Yeah, the only three issues of Autosport I've seen in the past 12 months, I haven't even leafed through it in a shop. The only thing I've seen are the three that were put online in downloadable format, and they were fantastic. And I had fingers crossed, absolutely, this is exactly, you know, Autosport were going kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
Well, no, they didn't, because they said there was no call for that.
No, no one's interested
obviously
in seeing an online version of a paper magazine, which is now obsolete.
So what did we get? This isn't a chant, by the way.
What did we get? I don't know. I do know what we got. What we got is a slap in the face, I think, is the best way of describing it. The Spinal Tap have a better way of describing what we got, but I can't say it on this show.
You will not. It's called Castrol Driver Rankings.
Now, you be careful how you say that.
Yeah, that's not...
You don't want to say that with a speech impediment.
It's not easy to say. The definitive ranking of the world's best drivers powered by Autosport.
Ha!
Now, I know you have a lot to say about this, but let me explain it first.
Cool.
It's essentially a massive list of about 2,000 drivers from across all the different motorsport series, compared and ranked and updated weekly. There's a 20-page document talking about how it works, although it's quite sneaky to tell you how it works without giving you any insight into the maths at all. Each driver gets a Castrol Index score based on results, and there's series waiting for drivers that don't participate in a full series. The points are added up each week, and it covers the last 12 months of competition. There are stats and graphs, and you can get into it as much as you like, but I don't like.
So, putting on my chilled out hat.
No swearing.
First question, what is the point of it? Is there or has there ever been a call or a demand for anything like this? I don't remember anybody saying, wouldn't it be brilliant if we could compare all the Formula One drivers against all the drivers from the other series that drive in completely different categories and have completely different driving styles and bear no relation to Formula One whatsoever? Wouldn't it be brilliant if we knew the definitive answer as to who was better? Has that ever happened, ever?
I can see how it might be slightly useful if it was something like a driver in GP2 and you could say, oh, I wonder how he would do if he moved up to F1. But then you've got things like Rally, and they're just such different series. I mean, you get someone like Bourdais, who clearly was good at Champ Car and wasn't good at F1, so they are not comparable in that way.
You're not comparing them like with like in any way, shape or form. Castrol Rankings has existed for a long time. It's used in football. It's a marketing thing that they use to compare players from different leagues and I think from different competitions within Europe and whatever.
Football stuff.
Yeah, I won't even pretend to know what it's about. It's about balls
and
pitches.
Does it have wheels?
No. Well, the thing is, here's the thing. When you compare one football player from one league with another football player from another country in another league, you have a certain amount of constants in that the ball is the same shape and the pitch is roughly the same size and the rules are basically the same. Now, yeah. So, and even then, you still can't get an accurate representation because different countries play the game in a different style. So
and
you'd have different amount of goals in certain countries and different ways of playing the same game.
I'm pretty sure that a goalkeeper does a different thing to one of the people at the front that
kicks
the ball.
Yes. I mean, how do you... It is
goalkeeper gets to use his hands.
Absurd idea. But to then try and take what is already a very tenuous concept and apply it to motorsport, which is completely different. And we know for a fact that motorsport... An awful lot of a driver's success is based on luck and judgment and timing and being in the right car with the right team at the right time, because the car makes a significant difference to a driver's success We're prepared to admit that. We're not going to deny that. We're not going to claim that Jenson Button could have won last year's World Championship driver's title in the car he had the previous year. It was mostly about the car. He's still the same driver he was. He just got lucky with his machinery, right?
True story. He's a good driver and he had a good car under him at last.
After having a very bad car under him. So the thing is, there's no way of taking that into account. Like, on top of that, you're then trying to compare a Formula One driver who goes around in circles every other weekend for 72 laps to a World Rally driver who does time trials against the clock in a straight line across the Dakar desert. How could you possibly... The two are like chalk and cheese. There's no way of comparing those two in any form of reasonable amount of calculation. It's just impossible. And Castrol and Autosport admit that this much, because if you look through these reams and reams of paper of how they come to the conclusion they come to, they won't tell you the definitive method that they come up with these figures. They keep the most important bit, the only important bit, secret. And I suspect the reason they keep it secret is because they know it's bunkum. It has no basis in reality, and what they're really doing is seeing which drivers they fancy the look of and giving them a higher score and then knocking some other people. You can't keep this kind of algorithm secret when there's no reason to keep it secret. There are some algorithms in the world you do want to keep secret because people might game the results. So, like, Google rankings are kept a secret because...
And they change the algorithm quite often.
Yeah, it has to be in order to keep on top of people who are trying to game the system and get a higher ranking. Formula One drivers... and or any motorsport driver are not going to try and to game the Castrol rankings. I'm not even sure they give a damn about where they appear in this list. So there's no harm in announcing and displaying completely openly and completely honestly what this is about, because no one's going to game it. You can't say, actually, you know what, I'm going to go drive for McLaren next year because I'm going to get a really good Castrol ranking. If I have reliability and I finish a lot.
Well, there's no...
Give me strength.
There's no chance that anybody in the industry is taking it seriously.
Well, no.
Jenson Button is at the top, which is fine. And
which is nice.
He was a good world champion.
World champion, multi-millionaire, supermodel girlfriend. And now...
now he's got a Castrol ranking.
Top of the Castrol rankings. But get
then,
in there.
Then you've got Trulli... two places ahead of Alonso.
Yeah. I mean, there's two problems with this
system. Is anyone... a Ferrari going to go, oh, I wish we hadn't picked Alonso now?
they're really regretting that, aren't they? They could have had Trulli. Even if you fixed the problems which are inherent within the system, which I don't think you can, but let's suppose you can fix it, there is no call for this. Nobody wants this. Nobody's interested in it. They announced this on Thursday at their Autosport show.
It was, in the morning.
It was the headline thing. It was the first announcement.
Major announcement.
Big news. And I took a look on Google News, which is a great place to find out how important a story is. And on most Formula One stories, you'll get like 150 news outlets picking up on something Bernie Eccleston said, or 250 people picking up on something that Jenson Button said. I found seven stories. Seven news agencies have picked up on the Autosport.
That, but half of the stories came from Autosport themselves.
Four individual stories were generated by Autosport. That is true. Four of those seven.
Yeah.
And how they managed to get four stories out of this announcement is anyone's guess, and something we should really investigate, because they are onto something with generating a lot of news from one item. I mean, literally, it made no impact on motorsport media whatsoever. I don't know how many people turned up to the Autosport show in Birmingham. I don't know how many journalists. It was a journalist day. I would expect, you know, hundreds and hundreds of journalists from all over the world turning up. And as far as I can tell, nobody has reported this of any significance. And looking around at things like responses from bloggers and commenters and people on Twitter, nobody has a good word to say about this. It's a disaster.
Generally speaking, they're either reporting that it exists, which is just, you know, the fact.
Wonderful.
Or they're reporting that it is rubbish.
Yes.
And that there's no good news there. One of my favourite quotes comes from Maneep F1. It says, in school, we all learn to compare like with like. It's useless trying to compare a penguin with a light bulb as it is to compare F1 with World Rally Championship or any other series for
true
that matter.
Story.
The only way the Castrol rankings could be made any less credible is if they threw MotoGP into the mix.
Don't give them more ideas.
I know.
Oh, no, that's going to happen next week. Oh, you'll see that. How does Michael Schumacher compare to the Rossi guy? That's what you're going to see next.
And Gavin wrote a great post about it on f1numbers.wordpress.com.
You have to read that.
This is a guy that knows numbers.
Yes, Gavin is a star. He's a legend when it comes to anything involving number crunching. He went through and he took a brief analysis from the initial day of the announcement. And he ripped it to shreds. And if you do nothing else today, after listening to this show, we'll put a link in the show notes. Go to Gavin's post and Maneep's post. We'll put links to both of those websites. And you have to go check them out because they tear the whole concept to bits. And the fact of the matter is there's just nothing of any substance under it. And I'm so disappointed in Haymarket and Autosport for thinking that this is something relevant that fans are interested in.
Well, here's the thing. There's no call for an online magazine. There is call for rubbish rankings.
Rubbish rankings. There you go. Yeah, no, apparently nobody wants it. No one's interested in an online version of a magazine instead of what people want to do is they want to live in the United States and they want to subscribe to Autosport and they want to get it 7 weeks late. And they want to read all about last month's Formula One news. That's what people want. And also, they want to know how Jenson Button ranks against Alan McNish.
On to something much more pleasant.
Woo! Ted News?
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a year, surely. Yeah. It's been a long time since we've heard from Ted.
He wrote a great article on the BBC website trying to make us think positive about the rule changes for 2010.
Does he listen?
Or 2010, however you'd like to say it.
We should really sort that out.
Yeah.
2010 sounds more sensible in conversation now that you say it, actually.
Yeah.
2010 does work for me.
So for 2010, the refueling is banned, and we've already talked at length about how we're not necessarily fans of that. And Ted has been trying to see the positive side, and he said that the strategies will still be there because we're worried about the lack of strategy and it being a procession from beginning to end.
Mm.
He said they'll be there, but they'll be different because the teams will have to work out exactly how much fuel to run because a tiny drop over can cost them lots and lots of time and it can make all the difference in a race. They need to work out when to stop and change to which tyres, how many pit stops to have. There's talk of a mandatory 2 pit stops.
Not such a fan of that one.
He said it's looking likely.
It's going down the same route as forcing teams to run 2 compounds of tyres. And it's a repercussion of that rule, basically, because teams are forced to use a specified prime tyre and option tyre. And there's almost going to be a guarantee that at some point through the season, the option tyre won't be good enough. It won't be up to scratch. It will fail too early. There's a question mark over the safety of running drivers on tyres that aren't fit for purpose. Now, the FIA wants to improve the show by introducing these green-striped, eco-friendly tyres, and as a result, they now may have to be forced into demanding 2 mandatory stops to ensure that all drivers are within the limit of ill-performing, underperforming option tyres.
It's like the complete opposite to the one tyre rule. Now you have to stop twice.
Yes. It's a fallout from another disaster that wasn't really thought through. And I can see it happening. I can see the strategy is now being decided months in advance because teams will know they have to run full tanks of fuel and run exactly 2 stops. And it's unlikely anybody will ever want to run 3. And if one's out of the option, then the strategy considerations will reduce significantly.
One quote from Ted I thought was interesting. He said, there are ongoing discussions about whether to make cars start the race on the tyres with which they finished qualifying. This looks like it will happen and will introduce an interesting variable into the mix, forcing front-running cars to try to qualify on hard tyres or race on soft tyres. Now, right. I said this in the comments, and I think Amy wasn't happy about the prospect of it ruining low-fuel qualifying, just as they've got back qualifying that actually shows you how fast the cars are.
Right.
And I think Stephen wasn't particularly impressed because obviously he wants to see overtaking on track and none of this messing about.
Yes. So what I don't know if this came from the Formula One Commission or who suggested this, but there are a lot of people within Formula One who don't want to see the fastest car on pole. And the reason for that is if the fastest car is on pole and everybody has the same amount of fuel and everybody has to make the same amount of stops, the car that gets pole on Saturday afternoon, barring any mechanical failure, will finish the race in first place.
Have I ever said how much I like qualifying?
Qualifying is going to be the highlight of 2010, no question about it. It was last year. It will be for me this year as well because the cars will be fat and heavy and slow in the race. And now the challenge will be, do you go for the softer tire and get a great qualifying lap and then stuff your race strategy because your tire doesn't last the distance?
You'll be heavy on a soft tire, which is not a good combination.
Yeah, or do you go for the decent race tire and then qualify badly? So it's going to mix up the order, and it's going to make qualifying very important. If this happens, then you're not going to want to miss Saturday because that's where the action will happen. I don't know. It adds another dimension to it. I don't think it's the end of the world.
I like the idea, but I think they're having to introduce it because they've brought refueling back in too soon.
Yes. Well, it's like the butterfly effect when they've made one rule decision and that's affected something else and that's affected something else and something. People are scratching their heads right now. They're running simulations on their supercomputers and all their simulations are saying Formula One this year isn't going to be very interesting and that's a problem. And therefore, now they're trying to backtrack and then backfeed some rules into the regulations and say, hold on a second, let's make sure it remains slightly interesting.
Ted finished with, much is still to be decided, but with only 16 days testing in February to get all the answers they need, F1's engineers and drivers have a lot to learn in a very short time. But do they? Because, as we mentioned earlier, a lot of the teams are forfeiting the first test. So far, I've got Virgin, Lotus, Red Bull and Force India all set to miss out on the first test in Valencia. Red Bull in particular say they're not bothered and they'd rather spend the time in the wind tunnel and the factory.
I can see why that might be the one to miss. The circuit isn't as important as Barcelona, which is the test that follows. Barcelona is an aero track through and through. Teams will race there this year in a competitive environment, and the more they can learn about Barcelona, the better. As for the other circuits, not such a big deal. Do we know if Bahrain are still campaigning to have a test at their circuit this year? Is that going to happen, a last-minute test before the season gets underway? Because if that does, then missing the first test is going to be of very minor significance, I think.
They are campaigning for it. I don't know if they're going to get their way.
I would assume that maybe Red Bull think that might happen, and therefore they're willing to forfeit the first test because they'll still manage to squeeze in as much mileage as they're expecting to squeeze in, and other teams are
expecting. On tracks they're actually going to use.
Yes, on two tracks. Barcelona and Bahrain are both tracks that they were running at this year, and Valencia and Jerez, which is the final place they'll be tested. Neither of those are of any significance.
Well, the other advantage is that they get to keep their car a bit more secret.
Yes, and it worked for them last year. I mean, the Red Bull was the car to have last year. It was the chassis design that everybody, we expect, will be copying
except
this
for
year.
The diffuser.
Well, it didn't have the diffuser, but it was retrofitted in very well. It certainly wasn't compromised when they put the diffuser on it, and we think most, if not all, teams will be looking at the innovations Adrian Newey came up with for that Red Bull for this year. If Newey's, presumably he's moved on a stage further than everybody else and he's got ideas for what to do this year, if he can keep those under wraps for a little bit longer, that won't hurt them either.
Before testing gets underway, we do have some launches. Now, I think the last time we spoke, the common launch plan was still in existence, although we didn't think it was very likely. Now it has officially failed.
Yes, which we're happy with because we didn't ever rate it as a
sensible
idea.
I was starting to come around to the idea from a fan's perspective, but it was never really a sensible option. And lots of the smaller teams were worried about how much coverage they would get, and rightly so. In that being the case, all the teams are starting to come out with their launch dates now. Ferrari and Mercedes on the 28th of January, McLaren on the 29th, Sauber and Renault on the 31st, and Lotus on the 12th of February.
So it's all go.
It's all go. Now, we'll be covering the launches on the blog, won't we?
Absolutely. Last year, may have been the first year we covered them. But I think, it was interesting and it was exciting and it was good to compare teams. And
last
looking
year,
forward to it.
Last year, I think we waited a little bit and then posted with pictures once they were available. I think this year we'll have threads going in advance and then we might update the pictures and things as we go.
That sounds like a very good plan. I'm looking forward to it. I like I said, I'm not expecting anything revolutionary, so it will be slightly less interesting.
They'll still be ugly, won't they?
Sadly, the rules haven't made them pretty this year.
Rubbish.
And last year it was especially interesting because everything was completely different and unexpected.
And ugly, yes.
This year, I think there's still some merit in following the launches.
We're almost at the end of our news section. There's been quite a lot to catch up on. I just wanted to give a quick mention to Bernie's crackpot ideas. I'm thinking we need a new jingle for this. It should be a section.
You could do that, Bernie's crackpot ideas.
Yeah. He wants circuits to have shortcuts in them.
Yes.
It's so weird. The quote from him, imagine a shortcut which a driver can use 5 times for every race. It would stop people getting stuck behind others. It would be good for TV.
It would be comedic. It would make turn Formula One into a laughing stock. He doesn't mean it. He doesn't for 1 second.
Would he say such a ridiculous thing?
I don't know.
He says crazy things all the time, but that is beyond. That's like a cartoon. Is he thinking of wacky races?
I don't know whether he's trying to wind somebody up or whether he's trying to push somebody into a decision. The only thing I can imagine, he's trying to put the wind up circuit owners who think they may have to install homologated shortcuts. Could you imagine? It would be lethal. Could you imagine cars going down a straight and then braking to take the shortcut whilst the car behind is still accelerating?
It's hard enough watching them come out in and out of the pit lane.
Every single thing about it would be disastrous. It's not serious. It's not going to happen. I don't know why he even suggested it. The guy's crazy.
Some more gems from him. He said, the other thing I've been pushing like crazy with people is that brakes these days are so efficient that I could brake as late as anyone else if I saw the braking markers. So he wants less efficient brakes.
Well, no, he has a point, actually. To be honest with you, if I'm not mistaken, he's been listening to the Side Podcast and he's been listening to Stephen Roy, who mentioned that on a Side Pod panel probably last year. This time last year, it was his suggestion that we need to get rid of carbon brakes because the problem is... the cars can stop too late and therefore there's no chance of passing in the brake. The braking zones are non-existent.
If you're going to have shortcuts on your track, you need good brakes.
Well, that's true. You raise a good point. That obviously his ideas don't go hand in hand. No, it's a good idea. Having worse brakes will require drivers to brake earlier and therefore there are more chance of making a mistake and allow cars to do more in the braking zone by extending those braking zones. And I think he's on to something.
Well, I can see that, but
The thing is, he said he's been campaigning for this for a long time. It's the first I've ever heard of it.
Pushing like crazy with people, he said. But the thing that worries me about that is the cars are getting faster and faster, and despite every effort, well, supposed effort, for people to slow them down, they keep getting faster, and then you're going to make the brakes less efficient. That doesn't seem like a good combination to me.
It needs to go... It's very difficult just to make the brakes worse because it's hard to forget what you already know. What you could do is chop a wing or two off of the car to reduce the downforce, and then you could mandate a less efficient brake material. I don't think it'll be less safe. I just think the drivers have to brake earlier, and it'll be down to them not to go flying off the road, as it currently is. It's just the brakes are so good, they can leave it to the very last split second, at which point there's no chance for anyone else to react.
And the last thing he did was complain about the new point system.
Wasn't his idea?
Well,
I thought he brought it up in the World Motorsport Council meeting.
I imagine that he's actually still secretly harbouring a hope that they'll put the medals in place. But he said, I think they were very clever in what they did because the point system that we agreed has made no difference at all. Because they're
true.
Bigger numbers, but the gap still isn't significant.
Mostly. It hasn't made a huge amount of difference. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he's miffed that his medals idea hasn't come into fruition. Imagine medals and shortcuts.
I'm telling you, wacky races.
Is someone going to put oil on the track? We're going to have fake wet races when halfway through the race, the sprinklers are turned on and the track suddenly becomes soaking. That's what's next. It's absurd. The man's losing the plot, or he's doing it for a particular reason and I just don't know what that reason is yet. And that's more likely. He's obviously trying to lean on somebody to do something. It's just we're not sure what that might be.
Feedback.
Now, you mentioned CFD while we were talking about testing, and I think we need to be careful when we talk about it. We had a message from Barry. It said, I was listening to your 20th of December F1 debrief. I'm still catching up. And you made the comment that computational fluid dynamics is a new technology and you were dubious about Nick Worth relying on it so heavily. As a mechanical engineering undergraduate student in the late 1980s, I remember using CFD. Back then, supercomputers were necessary for fast calculations, while today your ordinary PC is quite a powerhouse. But the mathematical equations underlying CFD have not changed. You might want to check your facts a bit more thoroughly before you claim engineering knowledge. Just a friendly suggestion. I do like your podcast quite a bit and look forward to your take on the events of the 2010 season. Cheers, Barry. Now, two things I love about this. Firstly, when have we ever claimed engineering knowledge? I like to think that most of the time we say we really shouldn't be doing this podcast.
Yes.
We know nothing.
You're talking about a person who can't even say longitudinal reliably and convincingly.
Secondly... I love it. It says, you might want to check your facts a bit more thoroughly before you claim engineering knowledge. Just a friendly suggestion. That's like saying, you might want to pay me back what you owe me before I break your legs. Just a friendly warning.
Yes.
I love it.
Barry has a point. I don't remember saying that. I'm sure it sounds like something I would have said. I would imagine I meant it relative to wind tunnel testing, and it's true that using CFD is a newer idea than sticking a car and blowing wind over it. So I probably meant relative as opposed to, or at least relative in Formula One as opposed to in the concept of engineering. It's kind of like using the internet, which existed in the 50s, but nobody really got their hands on it until 15, 20 years ago when it became mainstream. And I guess it's what I meant to say, and what I didn't say was CFD is yet to become a mainstream means of developing a Formula One car. Now, this year might be the year that it does become mainstream, but in my mind, it's still an untried and untested and new technology.
Another email I had.
What have I said now?
No, this is a good one. Dear Christine and that lovable rogue Mr. C.
Oh.
There you go. I discovered your podcast this year and just want to thank you for all the great shows and entertainment. Your podcast and website have really enhanced my F1 experience. Also, just wanted to comment on how much I enjoyed Stephen Roy's miniseries. I found them all very fascinating, especially the shows on Jim Clark and Bernd Rosemeyer. It was so interesting to hear about drivers from eras way before my time. And that's from Benji. We also have two guest posts from Stephen so far this year.
Yes.
He's on a roll.
They're only posts at the moment, but when he's working on a series of them, and hopefully when the series is complete, we can convince him to record his thoughts and his words, and we can put them out as a podcast, because I really, really enjoyed that series. And all credit to Mr. Stephen Roy. It was a fantastic end of the year. And with any luck, we'll get some more from him soon.
Next up, a message from Big Mealy, which I'm assuming is not his real name. It says, hi, Christine and Mr. C. Firstly, I'd like to wish you and all the other side podcast followers all the very best for 2010. And here's hoping that 2010 gives us a great season of F1 racing. Secondly, I'd like to say thank you for providing another year of stellar F1 content to us. I hope the return of a certain German doesn't distract you too much from what you do best.
Are you kidding? I'm loving it.
Thirdly,
if he fails, I will be over the moon.
Thirdly, Mr. C's blog post, Most Prolific Contributors for 2009, has made me realise why I don't comment on your website. I just don't have the time to read over 1,200 comments every day. Given the stats that were presented, the top 10 posters accounted for just under 50% of the comments, which indicates that there is a core group of people who follow the comments religiously. I get perhaps half an hour per day in total to look through all new media content that I subscribe to, and I'm afraid that I always ignore the comments on side podcasts. However, given the number of comments, I'm worried that I'm missing out. I'm certainly not suggesting that people comment less, as there's obviously a thriving community who love what you have facilitated, but I just wanted to give my excuses for not getting involved more.
Big Meaty, I will say we are working on it. I have the same problem. Neither can I keep up with 1,200 comments.
That's why we made breakout threads.
So breakout threads are the haven for casual side podcast followers. The people who, well, let's say have a life. Let's put them in that bracket.
Yeah.
People who probably have other hobbies and aren't as obsessed about Formula One as certain people. And I put myself in the other bracket.
Yeah.
We have breakout threads, which are threads dedicated to Formula One conversation and only Formula One conversation. And by and large, those threads tend to, depending on the subject, hover around 60 comments mark. Sometimes if it's a controversial subject like Flavio, it went up to about 200.
Or a certain German.
that tends to kick off the conversation. USF1 really does kick off, yes, off the conversation. So USF1 is a trending topic in that respect. Certain threads will only get 5 or 6 comments, and you could read them, you know, you could read them over lunchtime or whatever. And you could contribute to them, and that's what they're designed for. We have a daily thread, which is anything and everything.
That's for everyone else.
Yeah, it's a daily thread for
the people with no life.
The abnormal people the daily thread isn't specifically Formula One related. It's just a friendly place to hang out and talk to people about life, really. The things outside of Formula One. It doesn't have any motorsport relevance or doesn't necessarily have any motorsport relevance. And that's where you'll find 1,200 comments a day, every day. Almost without fail. And it's a fantastic Formula One community. It's a fantastic community of people. And then you have the breakout threads, which is just for people who are interested in Formula One and want to get a grasp of the conversation and take part in the conversation without dedicating their life to side podcast.
Finally, I dug out a message from Facebook from George, who had just listened to one of the best of shows. I think it was the best of side podcast. He said, just listened while walking the dog in some bitter cold and blowing snow, nearly laughed out loud at a couple of points, and did enjoy the little snippet of Felipe Baby. 2010 should be a good year, even with the return of M. Schumacher, because we no longer have the Dark Lord Max. I find it hard to believe that I admired the guy after reading an article about him in a 2002-ish car magazine. Also, was wondering after you spoke of Mr. Heidfeld, why no one has hired him yet? I would have assumed that he would have been a better pick than Trilly. Well, not if you look at the Castrol rankings.
Oh, cutting. Where does Heidfeld rank?
I actually don't know.
No, I don't care. Yes, good question. I do not know why Mr. Heidfeld has been left out of what's going on, because the seats are slowly being taken, and as yet he's not in line. We had expected there to be a berth for him at Sauber, but there are now strong rumours that it might go to somebody else, possibly Pedro De La Rosa. We don't really know. I cannot give you any single sensible explanation why Heidfeld's been overlooked. I think he's a strong and solid driver.
He'd be really good for a new team.
He'd be brilliant for a new team. He's reliable. Thinking about the reliability, he's probably topping. He must be second in the Castrol rankings. He's that reliable. I don't know why he's been overlooked. There is no sensible explanation for it. I don't think he's ever upset anybody. I don't think he's gotten the wrong side of anybody. And it would be a loss to Formula One if he didn't get a seat this year.
Housekeeping.
Over Christmas and New Year, during our little bit of off-season, we have been fiddling about with the website, as we always do. And there were two things that we were working on in particular, and one of them was an F1 Minute.
F1 Minute video.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
Goodness, we worked hard on that.
Well, we've had that planned for quite a while now, haven't we?
This time last year it was supposed to happen, and time didn't allow for it. And therefore, we sat on it for a whole year, and we thought about it, and we worked on it a bit more. And finally, we managed to push out 5 episodes, one a day, for a week. And it's your audio show. Basically re-represented in video form.
That's right.
And we're experimenting.
With moving pictures.
Yes, we're experimenting some more. It still takes a little bit too much time. It would be a full-time job, or almost a full-time job, for one person to do it continuously throughout the year. So it's not the kind of thing we can do without any form of financial backing. There may be something we can do to make the process more efficient, but it seems to be well received. What we made went down well, and we're not giving up on it. It was an experiment to see if it was possible, and it is possible. It's just not possible whilst continuing to keep our full-time jobs that we have to
yes,
to keep Side Podcast going.
Side Podcast's a hobby, don't you know?
Yes, we've got to keep a roof over our heads, and making F1 Minute videos wouldn't do that.
They are still available to look at on f1minute.com, and we are taking feedback and suggestions all the time. Like you said, they seem to be well received, but we are taking feedback and criticisms and anything of that kind, because we want to make it better and see what the future holds for it.
Absolutely. Please do get in touch, and please let us know. And if you have a website and a huge amount of cash burning a hole in your pocket and you'd like to pay for a daily F1 Minute video, then give Christine an email, because
Christine@sidepodcast.com,
and say, I've got an awful lot of cash burning a hole in my pocket, and I wish to pay for F1 Minute to be made, because we'd love to do it and it is a lot of fun. But at the moment, it's a non-starter for purely economical reasons.
I think that is our show.
Wrapped.
We did this show not live.
No.
Unlive? I don't know what the word is for that.
Offline.
Offline.
I guess.
And it was weird. I'm just talking to you.
I know. It doesn't feel very interactive, does it?
Mm.
We got through it, though.
Yeah.
The reason it's offline is because the live server is dead. It's being rebuilt for to be a bigger and better, more reliable.
Don't promise things like that. Just one that works would be good.
No, it's not going to work. It's going to work, and it's going to be awesome. And we'll be back in maybe 2 or 3 weeks' time with a proper live show. And if you've never caught a Side Podcast live show before, now is the time to come along. Once we've got
live,
not today, not when you're listening.
When it works.
Because it depends when you're listening. When we've got the new live server up and running, we'll let you know on the blog. Keep your eye on sidepodcast.com. And we'll let you know when we're going to do another live show. And when we do, it will be fantastic.